Everybody, I'd like to go ahead and call Senate Finance Committee to order. It is 9:00 a.m. Thursday, February 18th, 2010. With me today is Ms. Co-Chair Senator Hoffman, Senator Ellis, Senator Thomas. Senator Olson will not be joining us today. He is...
Senator Egan.
Excuse me, Senator Egan is here. Senator Olson is detained in other meetings along with Senator Huggins. He's in, has a...
Education.
Yeah, he's got Education Committee, and I think there's a funeral going on in Anchorage. So today on the agenda, we're going to start and work a short hour instead of an hour and a half. And we have a floor session at 10:30, so we got to get out of here a little earlier. And we're going to go over production tax credits by the Department of Revenue. And then we'll continue on into the afternoon until we're done with production tax credits. And then... And tomorrow, we're going to go over tax penalties and revenue forecasts. And then on Monday, we'll have then have gone through all of our tax structure as far as oil, and then we're going to plug in gas, talk about that. And then we're setting up the schedule for next week. We'll go ahead and continue on with industry coming in and talking about some of the technical aspects of the bill in front of us. We'll have a brief at ease. Back on the record, we're going to go ahead and start our overview. With us today is Commissioner Galvin from the Department of Revenue. And if you could introduce your colleague there, Commissioner, and then take us through your presentation.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Pat Galvin, Commissioner, Department of Revenue. And today I have with me Lenny Dees, who is one of our master auditors. And as I was telling the chairman just before here, he likes to refer to folks as the master of the audit. And Lenny is, I think, truly the master of the audit area for us as it relates to production tax. Lenny has taken the role of leading that group through the development of the auditing function for the ACES system. But he's here today to talk about production tax credits. We're going to go through the credit aspect of production tax from basically the different components the different types of credits that exist out there and the sections that they correspond to, and then how they're utilized, whether it's taken against the tax liability or submitted to the state and request a payment from the state. And so we'll walk through the mechanisms, how those things happen, and then some of the compare and contrast, some of the features of the various credits, whether they're spread over 2 years, whether they're transferable, all those things. We're going to try to pull those apart and explain those a bit more clearly today. If you remember from a few weeks ago when we were presenting the production tax calculation method in the income statement form, and we'll return to that at the end of the week as sort of a wrap-up, where we are now is near the bottom of the calculation. This is after you've established what your production tax value, the volume of the oil that's being taxed, you've established your tax rate, and what your tax liability is before credits. We're now in the section dealing with what are the credits you get to apply against that tax liability. So with that, I'll turn it over to Lenny, and maybe you'll start by putting yourself on the record, and then you can begin your presentation.
Thank you, Pat. My name is Lenny Dees, and I'm an audit master with the Tax Division, Department of Revenue. And in my function in the Department of Revenue Tax Division, as Pat mentioned, was to oversee the audit, the production tax audit group, and included in that function is the administration of the tax credit program. We are the group that deal mostly with the taxpayers that are applying for credits and trying to get cash purchases from the state for their credits. So we know a lot about tax credits. What I'm going to attempt to do today is to talk a little bit about the different types of credits, give you some background on what we've experienced in terms of the history of the credit since 2006, provide some data, it's limited data, on some of the activities in the credits, you know, the actual numbers, if you will. One thing I'll mention is that we use a lot of manual processes. I know you've heard that from Department of Revenue enough this week, but we use a lot of manual processes to try to administer this program. A thing about tax credit I will say, though, is that it is the part of ACES, I think, that created a lot of just constant new activity and interaction with taxpayers. And as a result of that, the tax division audit group actually we had to change our structure somewhat to create a group of auditors just to deal with the tax credit program. That's how much activity we've experienced with this. And the tax credit program has also kind of created a cottage industry, if you will, out in the oil industry, where, you know, you have people that are actually assisting companies in helping them to adhere to and to understand and to best look at using tax credits. So I'll start with my presentation. First of all, an overview. What we're going to talk about first are the type of tax credits that exist. Then we're going to go into how they're applied against tax liabilities, the process of give you some history on tax credit certificates, and history on the cash refunds. And at the end, I'll have a little bit of information on some of the analysis of the actual activity that we've seen.
If we could just stop for a minute, just for the people watching at home, the significance of these credits, we don't really delve into too much right now, but basically what's going on is the state, through the credit, is increasing its share of the upfront capital costs going into the development. And they're very sensitive as a credit. If we take a credit from 10% to 20% to 30% to 40%, it's a huge shifting of the cash flows between the industry and the sovereign. And the larger the credit, the more of the upfront development cost is going to the sovereign, and it significantly alters the rate of return to the industry. And I don't think we're going to spend a lot of time on that today, but it is a huge issue. So even though we might talk of a 20% or a 30% credit, there's big differences. Senator Thomas, okay, go ahead and continue.
Okay. First, I'd like to talk a little bit about the type of tax credits that exist under the statutes. In statute 4355.023, we have what we call capital expenditure credits. These are credits for your typical capital activities that company undertake in the production of oil and gas. I have a slide that will go into a little bit more detail on what particular types of activities those are. Next, we have exploration credits. We have two types of exploration credits. We have some exploration credits that are a portion of the capital expenditure credits, and we have what we call exploration incentive credits, which are more your wildcat type exploration activities, drilling a well where none existed, and those type of, and seismic type operations. Next, we have what we call a net operating loss carryforward credit. And for a company that's just starting up, generally what happens is, before the revenue stream picks up, first few years of activity, the company is going to experience a net loss, more than likely, because of all the upfront capital and operating costs that you have. And so the state is providing a credit for that net loss, net operating loss. The next credit is the transitional investment expenditure credit, which was a credit that allowed the companies to for the expenditures that were incurred prior to PPT coming into effect, gave the companies a little bit of a credit for that expenditure. And the last credits on the list is small producer credits. Okay, capital expenditure credits under statute AS 4355.023A1. It's a 20% credit, 20% of qualified capital expenditures, or we refer to it as QCE. QCEs include drilling, construction of facilities, new equipment, and those type of activities that are building and expanding the infrastructure of an oil and gas operation.
Mr. Dees, we're going to try to stay away from acronyms.
Okay.
It'll slow the meeting down a little bit, but the people at home will be able to follow us. Even maybe the people in the room will be able to follow us a little better.
Okay, where I have acronym, I will attempt to define them first, but I'll stay away from them. The expenditures that qualify for a qualified capital expenditure also qualify for net operating loss carryforwards. When you think about the way that the production tax value was calculated under ACES, where you begin with your gross value of the oil and you deduct from that the lease expenditures. Lease expenditures include capital in addition to operating type expenditures. To the extent that those expenditures exceed the value of the oil, you have a net operating loss. And what this statement here is illustrating that capital expenditure credits, the expenditures that qualify for those do also qualify for the net operating loss carry forward. So to break that down even further, a company can get 20% credit for the qualified capital expenditures. In addition, they could get those expenditures may lead into the net operating loss carry forward credit, and they would get 25%. So potentially for capital expenditure, if a company is in a net operating loss situation, they could get 45% of that capital expenditure as credits, in those two types of credits. So that's the significance of that statement. These expenditures that are considered qualified capital expenditure do not qualify for the additional exploration incentive credits. So for the, and we'll be talking about these credits later, the 025 credits. So you can't get a credit for both a capital expenditure credit and a exploration credit for the same expenditure. Okay. The expenditures must be spread over 2 years. That was a rule that was changed in ACES. Initially in PPT, companies were able to take the credits against their taxes if they had a tax liability all in the same year. ACES changed that effective July 1st, 2007, where the credit had to be spread over 2 years. And these credits may be cashed or transferred. So if you have a credit, a company has a credit, and they don't have a tax liability, they can apply for a transferable tax credit certificate. And eventually, if they meet the requirements, the state will purchase those credits from the company. In the exploration credits, we have two main types. We have the capital credit for exploration activity, which is in statute 4355.023A2, and the exploration incentive credits. The capital credit for exploration activity is a 20% credit. Under 4355.023A2, the qualifying expenditures that qualify for the capital credit for exploration activities include geologic and geophysical exploration, or expenditures incurred in connection with drilling an exploration well. These credits, as with the qualifying capital expenditure credits, must be spread over 2 years. These expenditures also enter into the calculation for the net operating loss carry forward, and they can be cashed or transferred by the taxpayer. The next type of exploration credit is the exploration incentive credit under section 4355.025. These credits could be 30% to 40%, and it depends on the facts of the project. The 30% to 40% rule depends on the location of a well. If it's an exploration well, depends on the location of the well and its proximity to existing wells or unit boundaries. Other types of expenditures that qualify for this credit include expenses associated with seismic and geophysical exploration work and of course, exploration well drilling. These expenditures may also qualify for the net operating loss carry forward credit, but they do not qualify for the capital expenditure credit.
If we could just pause there for a minute, and I know the commissioner is quick on his addition. So just as an example, you have somebody in Prudhoe Comparic that's going to qualify for a 20% capital credit for a project, somebody outside of that arena going after exploration, and say, example, they qualify for a 40% credit. How much cash up front would the industry have to put in? And how much of that burden is pushed off to the sovereign, including the federal government? Or do you have those breakdown coming for us?
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm trying to understand the question. Within the, if there is a...
$100.
Oh, $100, okay.
$100 so expended on a project, and you have a 20% capital credit. How much of that $100 does the industry put up initially? How much after the wash credits wash through to the state? How much, and you can combine state and federal government if you want, because...
Well, generally, just looking at it from the nominal tax rate, you've got the fact that you're already going to be deducting that $100 spend from your production tax value. So that will reduce your taxes by the tax rate times that amount. So depending on the price of oil and where you are in the progressivity scale, it could be 25% or higher. In addition to that, since you are within an existing field, you're then qualified for the 20% credit. So of that dollar you spend, then right off the top, you know you're going to get at least 45 cents back from the state in the form of either a reduction in your tax liability or a credit against your tax, basically the same thing. You're going to reduce your taxes by at least 45 cents. If you're an explorer sitting outside of the unit and you're able to take that dollar expenditure and have it qualify for the maximum 40% exploration credit, then you're also going to be able to get that initial 25% as well. And this is where, and I think Lenny will get to it in a subsequent slide, but even if you don't have current production where you're deducting that dollar from in order to save yourself the 25%, if you have zero tax liability, you deduct the dollar, which gives you a negative profit, basically, of a dollar. You apply the tax rate against it, 25%, no progressivity because you don't have any profit, and you get a net operating loss of a dollar, 25% of that, 25 cents, that then becomes a credit the following year. So you still get to enjoy the 25% plus the 40%. So of that dollar, the state is basically contributing 65 cents. Then as the chair indicated, if you're in the area where you're actually paying taxes, then you're going to have a reduction on your federal income tax on top of that. So the state's contribution, because of these various taxes, becomes either somewhere north of 45 cents on the dollar or 65 cents on the dollar, depending on whether you're in an existing area of activity or outside of it.
And then maybe, and I'm just, you know, I haven't had the opportunity to look through the presentations because they're hot off the press, but maybe this afternoon or you can bring back one of the old slides. I think we've got those in some old presentations in a bar chart showing a little bar, how much is applicable to the industry, how much to the federal government, how much to the state, because one of the things that's rarely discussed is the impact of these credits on the cash flow, and they're huge. Senator Egan, I think, had a question, or was it Thomas? Senator Egan.
Well, I didn't raise my hand yet, but I have a question.
Sure, and then we'll go to Senator Thomas.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm confused about the NOLs. Can you, talk about selling them back to the state. You can't transfer those net operating losses like to another company, can you? Can you transfer those to another oil?
Okay.
Yes, Chair.
I didn't look on the next page. Okay.
The net operating loss carried forward, as Commissioner Galvin just said, you get a 25% credit for your net operating loss. That particular credit can be converted into a transferable tax credit certificate, which could then be transferred or sold to another taxpayer that has a tax liability.
Okay.
Or if you, you know, in the first year or so of operation, and say you're going to eventually have a tax liability the next year or the year after, you could just keep that credit and apply it when you do actually have a tax liability. So yes, it can be sold either to another taxpayer or back to the state.
Follow-up?
Thanks. Yeah, and one more follow-up, Mr. Chair. On the previous page, it talks about expiration of these exploration incentive credits in 2016. With all the talk about building a gas line and probably a whole bunch of wildcatters, if in fact it occurs, is that wise to expire this in 2016?
Senator Egan, Commissioner field that answer.
Senator Egan, through the chair, the history of the exploration incentive credit program is one of setting expiration dates and then evaluating whether or not the program is being utilized, and if it is, then the expiration date tends to get pushed back. I think the original expiration date was somewhere in the middle of this past decade, and then as we approached the time where that credit would expire, the legislature extended the expiration date, and it now currently sits at 2016. I think as we approach that date and companies are having to anticipate having the access to this credit as they make their investment decisions, the legislature will look at whether the credit program is doing what it was intended to do and make a determination of whether to extend that current date. Another thing with regard to net operating losses, your initial question, I think, was a particularly important distinction where you had asked about whether the loss could be transferred. And what is important to recognize is that the loss itself cannot be transferred. It's once the loss becomes a credit, it then is transferable as a credit. And it may sound like it's a semantic difference, but it actually has a big potential dollar impact, because if the loss itself was able to be transferred, given progressivity, if you transferred a dollar loss from a company that has no production and would generate a 25% credit and that dollar ends up going to a company that is at a higher level of tax on a progressivity scale, it could then swing a lot of dollars towards that company, and they would make those sort of the arbitrage between the two companies something of value to them, and they could basically split the difference, and the state ends up on the low end. So the structure is such that the loss itself stays with the exploration company until it becomes a credit, and then that credit is either cashed back to the state or transferred to another taxpayer.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I see there are slides later on that deal with dollar value, so I'll hold my questions till that point in time. Thank you.
Go ahead and continue.
The only other thing I'll just say about net operating loss carry forward is the expenditures that do lead to the net operating loss include both operating and capital expenditures. Transitional investment expenditure credit under Statute 8 AS 4355-023-I equals 20% of qualifying capital expenditures that were incurred by companies between March 31st, 2001, April 1st, 2006, essentially the five-year period prior to PPT. The credit could not however exceed 10% of the capital expenditures that the companies incurred between March 31st, 2006 and January 1, 2008. So there was kind of a limit on the amount of credit that the companies could take. ACES revised the statute to only cover producers or explorers not having production prior to January 1st, 2008. These credits are not transferable and they may not be carried forward beyond 2013. And the same capital expenditures that qualify for this credit may not qualify for the expiration credit. As you may remember, expiration credit under AS 4355-025, I think it came into being in 2003 time frame, about 3 years before PPT. And so if a company had used some expenditures to get an expiration incentive credit under 025 back in that time frame, they could not use those same expenditures as part of their transitional investment expenditures.
And just to kind of put this in context for folks, these are the credits that were put in place by PPT as the look back or clawback or tie credits that were intended to provide a recognition for the investment that companies had made leading up to the transition from ELF to PPT. When the ACES changes were made, the tie credits were basically eliminated, were capped at the date that ACES became effective. So they were the companies that had made the expenditure were able to actually apply the credits that they had that were applied for during the PPT period. They could apply them during that time frame. And it was only the companies that did not have production by the time ACES came into being that were kind of lumped and said, okay, you can hold on to those tie credits. If you made investments prior to PPT that earned a tie credit, but you didn't have production yet when ACES came into being, you could hold on to those until you get production. And so there's just a small amount of tie credit still left out there. Most of them have already been applied against tax liabilities years past. And so this is not a significant area with regard to revenue swings.
Can you go ahead and continue?
Small producer credits. There are two small producer credits, basically. In statute 4355-024, in section A, we have a $6 million credit that could be used against tax liability. It's for available for companies producing less than 50,000 barrels of oil a day. The production must be from wells outside of Cook Inlet, North Slope, and the credit expires in 2016. Or could be used for 9 years after the first commercial oil and gas production if before May 1st, 2016. The credits may not be cashed or transferred or carried forward. In other words, it's an annual credit. And if the company qualifies for the $6 million, if they had $6 million of tax liability, they could claim that against the tax liability. If they had less than $6 million of tax liability, they can only claim up to the tax liability. It cannot generate a negative tax liability or a refund. The next small producer credit under Section C of AS 4355-024 is a credit of up to $12 million. And it's for companies producing no more than 100,000 barrels per day of oil. And the actual credit is prorated between 50,000 and 100,000 barrels a day. So once they exceed the 50,000 barrels a day range for production, the credit reduced from the $12 million down to zero. It can, again, it can be applied against the tax liability. It's an annual credit. The production is not restricted by region. And these credits, again, cannot be cashed or transferred or carried forward. Next, I'm going to talk about some of what we've experienced in terms of credits being applied against tax liability. And in dealing with credits, you have, I'd say, two categories of companies slash taxpayer that we deal with. You have those that are producers who actually claim their credits on their tax filings every year, and you have the companies who don't have production yet, don't have tax liability, who actually have to apply for the credits through our credit application process. So this next part of my presentation is talking about the companies that actually have tax filings every year. Now, on these tax filings, the companies can indicate how much qualified expenditures they have for qualified capital expenditures, other type of credits like 025 credits, the transitional investment credits. In other words, they don't have to apply to the department to get these credits. They just claim them on their tax returns, and of course the department has to go back and we have to audit those returns and those credits. The 023A credits, which we talked about earlier, must be split over 2 years. And NOL, sorry about the net operating loss, transitional investment expenditure credits, small producer credits, and the expiration incentive credits can all be claimed in full in the current year up to the extent that they don't exceed the tax liabilities. If a company so chooses, they can convert some of these credits into transferable tax credit certificates by filing the appropriate applications. 023A, the net operating loss credits and the 025 expiration credits are convertible. They can apply to the department to get a tax credit certificate. When they apply to the department for the tax credit certificates, we issue certificates that split the credits into 2 years. So they'll get a certificate that says this could be used in the year that the certificate was applied for, and the other half could be used in the following tax year. 025 tax credit certificates, however, can be used in a single year. So they only get one certificate for an 025 tax credit.
Which is your expiration credit.
Yes, which is the expiration credit.
You would say these are millions of dollars.
Yes. Next is a slide of and this chart is in millions of dollars, I may add. Based on some of the tax filings we've received for tax years 2006, 2007, and 2008, we've accumulated here some of the credits that the companies have claimed on their tax filings. In the for the capital expenditure credits, which includes the A1 and A2 credits, companies claimed for tax year 2006, $204 million, $282 million in 07, and $342 million in 08. The TIE credit, the transitional investment expenditure credit, you can see we're only claimed during the tax years 2006 and 2007, because after that they pretty much went away except for the companies that didn't have production before 2008. Small producer credits were being claimed each year. And we had some companies claiming expiration incentive credits. Now these, again, I'll just reiterate on this particular chart, these are credits that they claimed that they earned during these years. The next chart is gonna tell you, show you.
If we could just stay on that or back up that, okay. Back up one page, page 15, I guess. So this 1,276 is 1,276,000,000.
Yes, for the 3-year period, yes.
That the state reimbursed the industry for drilling and exploration and capital work done.
Well,
in the
it's not what we reimburse, it's what they, these are the credits that they're
qualified
declaring
for.
That they earned during that period.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
The next slide is going to show what they actually. Okay.
They're deducting it. If it wasn't there, they would have paid us. They would have paid the Treasury. So this is a direct impact on the Treasury. There's another way of looking at it.
And
if we zeroed out these credits, is that not correct?
That's not, well, not exactly.
Okay,
this slide is showing what they will eventually be able to deduct. Now, some of these credits, they couldn't deduct all in full the year that they earned them. Like, for instance, when the law changed in 2007, that $282 million that were earned, not all of that would have been deductible in 2007 because some of that has to be deducted in the second year, okay? But for the activity that they incurred during that tax year, that's what they earned as credits based on the capital expenditures that they incurred.
So when I look into the Treasury then, I'm 1.276 billion shy after we do the 50% implementation than the Treasury would have been if it didn't have any credits, assuming everything else has been equal.
Well, Mr. Chair, the difference between, if you just, sorry for the confusion, between these two slides, this one and the very next one, one way from an accounting perspective to look at it is this is on the accrual basis.
Right.
This is what the taxpayers, the credit they accrued, the right to a credit that they accrued by making the expenditure.
Right.
The next slide is on a cash basis when they actually were able to apply them and turn them into cash. And so getting to your point, which is just over $1 billion has been reduced from the Treasury over the 2006, 2007, 2008 time frame because of credits.
Well, I think we understand accrual and cash, and you know, we're trying to work on the concept so people at home realize what we're dealing with here. These are huge impacts on changes of cash flow that wasn't normally in the system 7-8 years ago. So, but when we, maybe when you come forward with that little bar chart showing how much of the burden on is being paid by the industry, how much the federal government, how much the state, you can throw in a dry hole to show the committee who actually at the end of the day, on a net basis, is paying the upfront cost for exploration that maybe just hits rock at the bottom and no oil.
Sure.
Because it gets lost in all these numbers that, you know, we the state are putting up a substantial amount of capital. Senator French has joined us here. I see him back there. And with Senator Thomas and then Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't see it as I flipped rather quickly forward here to see, initially, I guess, is anyone actually qualifying for the small producer credits at this point in time, either the particular 4355024A credits?
I think most of these were C credits.
And are you able to break those out between the A and C, A versus C, as far, do you keep that statistic? I'm assuming you probably do if you're accumulating the information, obviously having one applied for and one maybe not at this point in time, at least applied for.
Yeah, well, you know, these were derived by, you know, actually accumulating the data from the actual tax filings. So sure. I think the tax filings would give us the information to be able to answer that question. But I'm trying to remember, I think most of these were all of these were C credits, 2024C.
Okay, and just
And then we'll go to Senator Hoffman.
Certainly, if we could get that information, I would like to see that anyhow, see what where the incentives working better. Or.
And repeat the question that you want them to answer or bring back to the committee.
The 4355024 versus A versus the 4355024C credits, which ones have been applied for, if any?
And for those at home in English, that's a statute number.
I don't know that I could. Well, I'm only quoting what I see.
Well, I think what you're asking for is how many credits are for, how many small producer credits are for areas outside of Cook Inlet and North Slope, and how many are for.
Correct. Yeah, that would be.
Yes.
I think we're going to hopefully go into that later on, the credits, where they came from, not only between Cook Inlet and the slope, but within the oil basin and the North Slope. We're heading down that road, so they may be answered later on.
And the only other question I had at this point in time was regarding, similar to your question, to understanding the idea of the net operating loss credits being converted to transferable, I'm assuming, meaning that they would be obviously transferable to someone else that can use them, obviously, since I can't use them, because if I was in a certain situation where I simply drilled a couple wells, had no production, gave up on Alaska, I could transfer those to somebody that is producing. That's correct.
You could transfer the credits. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Hoffman.
But going back to the previous slide, we're looking at this and trying to interpret it. The one large, the one with the TIE credits was in 2007 of $145 million, but that program is no longer available. So when you sort of take that information off the table, the largest program is the capital expenditure credits. And from 2006 to 2008, that program has increased by $140 million. The rest of them are pretty insignificant to that program. And as I said, the TIE credits have expired. So if you compare 2006 to 2008, the overall increase is still $40 million, with the largest increase in capital expenditures of $140 million. But do we have any type of indication of what's happened in 2009?
And an estimate or a guesstimate of 2010.
Senator Hoffman, through the chair, if you go back, and we can bring that forward in the afternoon, but if you go back to our presentations earlier that project capital expenditure levels.
Right. We saw those in bars in yesterday's
right, presentation. Right. And what we see is the capital expenditure levels are continuing to go up. So we would expect that if you extended this chart out into 2009-2010, that line item for capital expenditure credit would continue to rise beyond the 342.
And would that be possible to
get numbers
bring that back if you don't have it in your presentation later on to us, so we don't have to add the two up?
Sure, we can bring a number for you.
Because we had that information in bar chart, as you said yesterday, but it would be good to see the numbers here today.
Senator Hoffman, thank you, through the chair. And just, and this actually goes,
oh, sorry. Just let me finish on that one. And if you could, and I think this is kind of nice, the way you guys set up these two slides, where you've got one showing the annual credits being generated, and then another one as far as when it's applicable to hit the Treasury with the 50% delay. So if you could if you could do both tables.
And Mr. Chair, just so you understand why it was presented this way, what Lenny did, and you can correct me if I'm wrong because I'm going off of what I heard, is this chart was prepared by going back through the tax returns, as he indicated earlier. And until we actually get the annual tax return, we are simply estimating or guessing which of these credits the taxpayer is going to claim and claim that they have actually qualified for. For 2009, we do not have a tax return yet. That won't be filed until March 31st. And so we don't have the actual form to generate a chart that would match up to these numbers. But what we can provide you is a estimate for a couple of the items that we can kind of project. But we won't, for example, on the small producer credit, we won't know until the end of the year who's actually going to apply for that one. But for the capital expenditure credit, we can take our current projected capital spending levels, which is based upon the information the companies have provided us, and do a rough calculation of what we would expect to have been earned on that line item. But again, it will be a different method of getting that number that won't be based upon the tax returns. So just want to make sure that's clear.
Follow-up, Senator Hoffman.
Yes, and the question, I guess, is that we see the capital expenditure credits on the rise, and hopefully that continues. But the exploration incentive credit seems to be a program that isn't working, and I think the people in the building are interested in seeing the industry going out and doing more seismic geological exploration and well drilling and to get more oil in the line. And do we know why this program isn't working as we envisioned?
Okay, if we could just hold that thought just for a second, just two quick things. I'll watch the clock for us and watch your number of your slides, because I know you haven't been here, Mr. Dees, before, I don't think. So I'll kind of help you to try to keep on track so at the end of the day your presentation is finished. And
maybe they could just answer that in writing later.
You can go ahead and answer. Go ahead and answer Senator Hoffman's
chair,
question.
To
Hoffman. Senator Hoffman.
Senator Hoffman. Now, one thing to consider is the fact that this set of taxpayers are only the taxpayers who are producers, who actually have tax liabilities. You're going to find, and I'll have some slides later on, most of the exploration type activity are going to be from the explorers, the people who, you know, don't currently have a tax liability, don't currently have production. So you'll see, I'll have a chart later on that's going to show exploration activity actually increasing in 2008. So this is only for that small set of taxpayers who have existing producing operations going on. And also, I would like to say that 2006, when you look at 2006, we're looking at a 9-month period of activity. So when you compare 2006 to 2007, 2008, 2006 is 9 months versus full years for 07, 08. So the ramp up may not be as great.
And I just want to remind everybody, it's kind of redundant, but the main capital credit expenditure on this slide here showing $828 million is taken off the top. We don't see it normally in our summary documents here that, and Senator Hoffman and myself have been working on that the last few years to try to make sure that we see our total revenue, then the capital credit taken off as if we would have paid it out to the industry versus having them just deduct it, because it is such a large amount and we need to keep track of how much that credit actually is and what's going on with it.
Yes.
That's why, Senator Egan, you haven't seen it at the table before.
Well, that's actually, that's one of the challenges that we have as auditors is keeping track of, you know, what each company has and what they're carrying forward on their tax returns.
We have about 5 minutes, so I'll just stop you when we get close to that, and we'll pick up at 1:30.
The next slide may help to answer one of the questions that we had about the actual credits. Actually, it's 024C credits, so are the only small producer credits that I picked up on the tax returns. This slide is a bar chart showing basically what the last two tables showed, the credits that were claimed on the tax filings. And as you can see, the 023A credits are the largest piece, followed by the 023I and 06 and 07, and the 023C credits. And again, here are the credits that are being applied against tax liability.
I just passed a note. I was scrambled on my time. I guess the floor session starts here at 10:45, so we can go to 10:30. So we'll just go on until 10:30 and stop.
Okay. Now this next slide shows kind of a combination of the two sets of numbers. What were claimed on the tax returns versus what were actually credits that were actually applied to the tax. And you can see in 2006, before the law changed, before the law said that they could only take 50% of the credit in the year that it was earned, the amount earned and the amount applied to tax was almost the same number. You know, there was $331 million in credits earned, there was $322 applied to tax. In 2007, the law changed to where 50% of the credit had to be, you know, taken in the second year after it was earned. And so you see a widening of that gap between what was claimed versus what was applied to the tax return. And in 2008, the gap got stayed about the same. So one way of looking at this particular slide is if you look at that difference between in 2008, the 376 that was earned versus the 282 taken, the difference in the numbers here is what we're carrying forward in terms of credits that are available for taxpayers to take. So, for instance, I know that some of the there's been talk about changing, you know, the 50% deference of taking the credits to where taxpayers can take it in the same year that it's earned. You know, if that happened and the state were to say, okay, immediately you could take what credits you've earned, it will be an immediate impact of about $200 million to the state for in terms of credits being taken by taxpayers against liability.
We count every penny in the Treasury, by the way. So
we have a more exact number for you.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, next we're going to talk about transferable tax credits. Again, transferable tax credits are how the taxpayers or the explorers that are not taxpayers get their credits and either turn them into cash by selling them to the state or selling them to other taxpayers. Since 2006, when the 023 credits came into being, we have issued 211 transferable tax credit certificates. And of the type of credits that have been issued on those certificates, $228 million has been for the capital expenditure credits. $64.9 million has been for the capital expenditures for exploration activities credits, the O23A2, and $340 million has been for the net operating loss credits.
Are we going to, Mr. Dees, are we going to be able to get into later on a breakdown of where the credits are created within the oil basin?
Where the credits are created within the oil? We will have a breakdown. I do have a one chart that will show where the capital expenditures are happening within the oil basin, whether it's North Slope Fields or Cook Inlet, Legacy Fields.
Mr. Chair, tomorrow I believe my group is putting together some representation of where the economic drivers are within the fields to get a better picture between, I think your interest is within the larger fields versus outside of the large fields, where the credits being applied and where is the revenue being generated. Right. And we're trying to get a representation of that that complies with all of our confidentiality restrictions.
Okay. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you could just refresh my memory as when the truing up is done. I know we do the estimates on a monthly basis. When is the true up done?
That's on the annual return.
Which is due
March 31st, April 1.
March 31st. So when we look at slide 21, number issued since 2006, at least for the transferable taxes credits, that would be through 2008 then, or
no, these transferable tax credit certificates, through the chair, Senator Thomas, these transferable tax credit certificates are through through February of 10.
Okay, they're actual. Right. Okay.
These are actuals.
Okay. Thank you.
And just
Commissioner?
Senator Thomas, the credit certificates are something they can apply for during the year as they make their expenditures. Once they kind of close out a particular project, then they're going to apply for the certificate for that particular expenditures in generally, because they've done with their expenditures for the year. They don't wait until they come to the annual tax return before they would apply for the certificates, and that's why we have a more up-to-date number on that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead and continue.
Next slide is going to show a little bit of our experience in exploration tax credits. Since the exploration tax credit originated in 03, we have had 59 applications for credits. Gross expenditures that have been claimed on those credits, $945 million. We have issued 36 025 credits, exploration tax credits, for $185.2 million in credits. We currently have 23 applications in process or in progress, and they represent expenditures of $439 million, where they're requesting $148 million in credits. This chart will show.
Hold it a minute there, Mr. Diesel.
Mr. Chair, ask if I can excuse myself. I have to go to a budget hearing on the other body. I may be back before this ends, but you're in Lenny's capable hands. I'm sure he can answer your questions, and we'll capture any questions that you may have for subsequent hearings as well.
Okay. You'll be back this afternoon?
Yes.
1:30? Okay.
This bar chart will show, in terms of number of credit applications, what we've received by fiscal year since the first application we received was in 2005. As you can see, in 2008, 2009, And in fiscal year 2009 and in fiscal year 2010, in 08 and 09, the number of applications we received increased pretty substantially. There was a lot of exploration activity going on. And the way our process worked is, you know, explorers would go out during the drilling season from, say, October through March, and the statute requires that they, within 6 months after the end of the drilling activity, that they apply to the department for the for the exploration credits. So this chart, I think, is reflective of and these are explorers, of the activity in exploration, which kind of runs counter to that other chart that I had for the producers. So there was quite a bit of exploration activity in 09 and 08. Next, we're going to talk about cash refunds. In order to for the state to to purchase transferable tax credit certificates, the taxpayer must meet certain requirements under statute 4355.028. In order for the transferable tax credit certificate to be repurchased by the state, currently the taxpayer must show that they've had subsequent expenditures equal to the amount of the credit that they're seeking to sell back to the state. And they must have a zero tax liability current in the past years and have no more than 50,000 barrels per day of oil production. In terms of credits that have been purchased by the state, by fiscal year, total has been $400.2 million, and that's a current figure through February 12th. That figure is updated through that date. The oil and gas tax credit fund that was created to repurchase their certificates currently has a balance of $90 million. It's an updated balance. Okay, next I'm going to have a few slides that are going to have some graphs on it that may help to explain some of the activity that's been going on in the area of tax credits. This slide is based on the tax filings that we received, and what we did was took out of the filings the capital expenditure deductions that the taxpayers were claiming credits against. And I tried to break it down by several operations together. For instance, the legacy fields, it's basically Prudhoe and Kuparuk. And as you can see in 2006, which was 9 months of activity, capital expenditures ramped up and kind of plateaued out in 2008. Other North Slope includes all the other fields on the North Slope and exploration activity on the North Slope that were done by these producers. And you see that activity is ramping up 2006 to 2007, and then an uptick in 2008. And then we had some activity that increased in Cook Inlet.
So the legacy fields, can you define what the legacy fields is included in there?
Kaparik and Prudhoe.
And that includes, does it include Alpine?
No, Alpine is included in other North Slope. Alpine, Endicott, Badami, well, Badami's not really doing anything, Milne Point, North Star, and some exploration activity on the North Slope.
So those, the last list, they're in the other North Slope, correct?
Yes, other North Slope, yes.
Okay, so we, so this is the blue line on top is Prudhoe and Kaparik, and I'm looking at that total capital, qualified capital expenditure deductions of $1.746 billion.
Yes.
I was just going back to check your credit to see if the numbers match with the credit, but since so you're an auditor, I would imagine if I back up a couple slides, you're going to match.
Well, remember now, this is, if you have to, okay, if we go back to, what slide number was it?
Credits applied against tax liability, somewhere around 16 or some 16, slides.
15.
Or maybe
15.
15, 16.
Yeah. 15. So capital expenditure credit, $342 million for 2008. Okay. Yeah. That would be roughly 20% of the 2008, should be roughly 20% of the 2008 total here. Of the 2008 total, the 966 plus the 518 plus the 262.
For 1,747.
Right, so if you, you know, roughly 20% of that.
350 million.
Yeah.
So the ability then, we spoke earlier about picking up 09 and as much of as we can get out of 010, guesstimate or forecast, whatever. Could you, was it possible to add this in there, in this data set that's going to come back to us so we?
This afternoon, I'm not sure because I'll see what information, what data they have. It may be, I'm sure they may have estimates for the legacy fields. I'm not sure how much data they have for Cook Inlet and North Slope, other North Slope fields, but.
Maybe just bring us back what you can, and then okay. We understand the time issue, and you can get back to the committee tomorrow or right. That presentation or what have you, but this would be nice to,
okay.
To have updated. And then, I guess later on, we've also had discussions here about, you know, what comprised this credit, how much within the legacy fields was possibly a result of refurbishing old equipment, pipes, what have you, old infrastructure, versus money that's going into the well itself.
Yeah.
If you could help us with that, that would.
Okay.
And that's a basic question for the non-legacy too, the other North Slope.
And actually, there's our credits claimed against 023 activity by year, and this includes all fields that were reported on tax returns. And as you can see, it's about a 20% credit claim for the expenditures.
Could you help me with this chart?
Yes.
In reference to the previous one, we have credits claimed is the 20%
right.
off of the 1745.
Right. Okay. And it's really, this is actually what they, the producers actually claim. So, you know, the math doesn't exactly equal 20%, and, you know, these numbers are subject to audit. Haven't been audited yet. So this is just straight off of the tax filings.
Okay.
The so
that,
next.
So that.
Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chairman, so that ties back to slide 16.
Okay. Yes.
Bottom line. Should tie back, but it's a little bit off there. 320.
Well, slide 16.
The red line.
Yes, I think I'm picking up I'll have to check into that one, see why that's different.
All right, thank you.
The next slide talks about tax credit certificates and what has been issued under for capital expenditure credits under 023A, and it should correspond with the information that's on slide 21. For 023A and the capital credits to $228 million is the sum of the 52, the 78, and the 98.
Go ahead and continue.
Okay.
Hold it, I guess. Almost continue. Senator Thomas.
Well, I'm reading when I probably should be listening here, and I'm looking back at the on slide 21. Those capital credit tax certificates were current to date, basically?
Yes.
Would that be the same for slide 22 then?
Yes.
So we do have that information?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's all. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead and continue.
The next slide is the, again, from slide 21, the capital credit certificates under 023A2, which are the expiration, the capital activity for capital credits for expiration activity. Basically breaking down to $64 million by year. $64.9 million.
Okay.
Slide, this slide is comparing the expenditures that led to the net operating loss credit certificates. Which again should correspond to slide 21, the credits of $340 million over the 3-year period. Okay, the next slide is showing the expenditures that were claimed versus the credit application we received for the exploration credits. And again, you see, it kind of illustrates kind of the activity that was taking place. Exploration activity ramped up in 2007, 2008, and actually got a little bit of 2009 activity in there. So finally, conclusions. Basically, we saw an increase in the legacy fields capital expenditures from 2006 to 2008, but we did see a plateau in 2007 and 2008. The non-legacy North Slope field and Cook Inlet, we saw a steady increase in capital expenditures. The exploration credit applications more than doubled from 2007. And we saw an increase in the 023A2 and net operating loss credits in 2007 and 2008, which also suggests some increased exploration activity. And that's the end of my presentation.
Could we buzz back to 29, slide 29, please?
Sir.
And I know you're going to, you'll help us with the 09 data and the 10 data, and even if you have any forecast guesstimates on 11 and 12. But how does Point Thompson, when we pick up Point Thompson in 10, I assume, how would that play into this chart?
It would be in other North Slope. We would show it in other North Slope. Actually, there's a little bit of Point Thompson in 08. There was some activity 08, and some capital expenditures were claimed for deductions, small amount.
Could, when you, you know, bring back your, you know, your updated chart with the 09, could you maybe put a little footnote on there about Point Thompson, or throw Point Thompson on another line, whatever works best for you, just so when we look at it, and then maybe throw a definition on in a box on legacy fields so it's clear what it is, because as we pick these up 30 days from now or 1 year from now, some of our memories aren't as good as they used to
be. Well, I chose the legacy fields as they were defined in AS 4355-165 J and K.
And that is what? I know that's a statute, but.
Yeah. That's what, you know, the standard deduction that they were talking about yesterday was only applicable to the legacy fields, which pretty much defined Kuparik and Prudhoe Bay. So. But yeah, I'll define that so that it's clear.
Because the issue at hand in the committee not only is what's gone on in the past as far as how it impacts our treasury, of course, and in the industry, exploration and development for new oil, but then we're trying to get a feel for what's going on today and then what's going on coming at us tomorrow.
Okay.
So that'll, you know, this is pretty good information from 08 back, but we still have those other two pieces we're trying to fill in. Do we have any other questions for Mr. Dees? What? Senator Ellis.
Mr. Chairman, I just appreciate you having this presentation before us. The series has been good, but today has been particularly helpful. I think there's a lot of ignorance on the part of the public and even some folks in the support industry for the oil fields about what is available in terms of credits and incentives. There are people roaming the building asking us for assistance for things that we've already have in statute. So there's a lot of or lack of understanding or lack of knowledge of that we truly are partners in the oil business with the industry, between state government and the industry. So I think this really helps for the information to get out there and for people to know what is actually in place today. So I appreciate it.
Thanks. It is complex. This was what we had on the agenda for today. Tomorrow we'll go ahead and pick up, we're going to talk about revenue forecasts and interest rate costs for what's applicable to the state and in the industry for discrepancies on tax filings. And then we'll see if Mr. Dees has ability to bring us back any more updated slides real quick, because this is part of the information we've been working towards the last several days, and that'll help us. Meeting adjourned.